Good morning, everyone. I'm going to call the Government Operations and Elections Committee to order. It is February 2nd, and Representative Fenton, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have. I moved the minutes from February 1st.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. And does anyone have any corrections, additions, or omissions? Okay, the minutes for February 1st have been approved. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed?
No.
No. The minutes are now officially approved. Okay. Our first bill that we're going to be hearing today is Representative Rarick. I see him in the room. We're going to be bringing your bill first. Good morning, Representative Rarick. Welcome to the committee. Would you? I will move your bill for possible consideration in the omnibus elections bill. So, if you would proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 655 is a bill that would allow Pine County to be able to appoint their auditor treasurer position. This is currently being done in 23 other counties in Minnesota right now. I believe you have a map that was handed out. Shows which counties in the state already have this ability. One of the biggest reasons the county is looking to have this ability is because of the technical nature of the position. They would like to make sure that the person is qualified, who's running the elections, who is taking care of the books. I will turn over the testimony to Commissioner Ludwig from Pine County for some more information.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Matt. Commissioner Matt Ludwig, Pine County. Okay, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Matt Ludwig, a county commissioner from Pine County, and the current chair of the county board. Thank you for hearing House File 655. Pine County has been well served by an elected auditor for many years. The incumbent, Kathy Clemmer, has worked for Pine County for nearly 28 years, and the last 10 as the county auditor. She will finish her current term in office at the end of 2018, at which time Kathy plans to retire. Since Kathy has indicated her intent to retire at the end of the current term, she and the county board have discussed the future of the office and believe that the time is right for considering and making the office appointed rather than elected. I worked for Pine County for 26 plus years as a deputy sheriff and an investigator. When I retired in 2012, I had no idea that I would run for a county commissioner seat. However, the untimely death of Doug Carlson provided that opportunity. When I was first elected to the county board over 3 years ago, I did not see myself as supporting the appointment of an auditor over electing for the office. As an officer of the law, I thought that the people had the right to pick their representatives. However, once we started to have that conversation and the role of the auditor, I began to understand the importance of that position to me as a county commissioner. We relied on our auditor for many things. The importance, the position does not have that much statutory authority for policy making, but does have a significant responsibility to administer and follow a myriad of laws and rules relating to elections, finance, and investments. The position also has a significant role working with and educating other county department heads on fiscal policy and other procedures. In light of Kathy's talents in Pine County, we have been able to assign additional non-statutory duties to the auditor's office, such as payroll and supervision of the accounting for health and human services. It is important to me so that we ensure that the next county auditor has the technical skills necessary to perform the broad scope of duties and to partner on the county's management team. In 2002, Pine County received the authority to make the county recorder an appointed position and to combine the offices of the county recorder and the county assessor. Because of this authority, recently we were able to eliminate a position, saving significant funds. In my view, appointing this position has had only positive results for the county and its taxpayers. As a county board, we have discussed this transition at several county board meetings, and there is unanimous county support for this transition. The local newspapers have also provided coverage of the idea so that our citizens are aware that we are pursuing this change. My fellow commissioners and I appreciate your support for this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss it with you this morning.
Thank you for your testimony, Commissioner Ludwig. Really appreciate it. Members, does anyone have any questions? No. Yes, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Ludwig, you had mentioned the, you know, responsibility to the people. Mm-hmm. I understand because of trying to get a person with the qualifications, but had you ever thought it'd be good to have a continuity so that the person is not just responsible to the board, but remembers that the position is responsible to the people by having it a retention so that if the people said, we want you to replace this person, they could, when it normally would come up on the elected docket and vote, that the people have a chance of deciding whether to retain or release, and then the board would be able to, appoint a replacement if the people chose.
Commissioner Ludwig.
I had thought about that, and we as a board have thought about that and had discussion, but we feel that we're elected by the people we represent in our districts, and if we have a duty also to make sure that person performing at that job, so the people still have a say through us by electing us to that office, and if we fail, if we want another term, we have to run again also. So it would work that way. Did they answer that? Your
point? Representative Plum.
Thank you. So you think because the elected body is making the selection, the people still have a choice. So, on a federal level, the senators used to not be elected by the people. They were selected mm-hmm. by the elected officials. And at one point, the nation as a whole decided, well, it's important, and we want to keep that. We want continuity to the people. So, I guess I would disagree about. It's better to move to appointed. I agree with the intent of moving to appointed for the position. I don't agree with the intent of removing accountability to the people. And I would like the committee to consider the possibility of allowing retention elections so that the position is accountable to the people still, even if it is filled by the elected officials. Thank you.
Commissioner Ludwig or Representative Rarick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One comment I'll make on that. And when this was first brought to me, I was a little bit leery of carrying the bill. I sometimes do not like to see the idea of a position removed from the ballot. And I had a lot of discussions with Senator Lori, who shared the same concerns. But after some talks with him and some talks with their county administrator and some of the board members, Senator Lori and I both agreed to carry the bill because we thought ultimately it would end up being a good thing for the county to help ensure that a qualified person gets the position. And we did agree with the board with the idea that if the board does not appoint somebody that is good for the position, it will end up costing them in the next election and then the new board would be able to replace the auditor. So I do believe that the people would still have an ability to have a say in who has that position.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rarick, I like your bill. I think we've seen at least one of these every year, and I have a bill later on that would expand it to all counties, and we'll discuss that at that time, but we always get people, our members of the legislature, that don't like this, and I remember one that's now a senator that used to rail on the floor about these, and then every year we pass every single one of them. And so it's like a, it's, I think, the bill I have that allows everybody to do it. In 2013, we had 20 counties that had the authority. I think according to the House research, now we're up to 40 counties that have that authority. 44, excuse me. It was 25, and now it's 44. So, I mean, it's my argument has been all along, for instance, for a long time, is, why don't we just let all of them have the authority with the what you have in your bill, which are the good things about it, being able to switch back if there's a problem, allowing the members of the public to be able to bring a petition to have a reverse referendum, so to speak, on it. And so, I mean, it's not saying that they have to do it, but allowing them to, in the situation we have here, to allow them to do it. So I'm supporting your bill. It's a good bill. I just think we should expand it to every county, and that way we don't have to see these every year and have deja vu every year in this committee.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, does your county have an audit done by an independent auditor?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludwig.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Okay. Members, any further questions? And are there any questions or any testifiers from the audience? I see we have someone approaching the testifier stand. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, my name is Matt Hilgart. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. I wasn't planning on testifying on this particular bill, although we will be testifying on Representative Nelson's bill later on the statewide system of this, but Representative Quam asked a very good question about what is the ability for the public to have a say after this has been appointed. And I do just want to point out Subdivision 5, lines 2.33 to the next page to 3.1 to 3.3, where the citizens, if 10% of the citizens, the eligible voters in that community, sign a petition, they can put it back on the ballot to be made a elected position. And I want to tell about one success story where that has happened, which is Lake County. Every member in this room does represent an appointed a county that has this appointment authority, except for Chair O'Driscoll. But Lake County is a good example where the citizens did get this opportunity. They got special legislation. However, the citizens said, no, we don't like this. Went to the ballot. It succeeded on the ballot, and their position is still elected. And their county board heard, the elected county board heard those citizens, and they listened to them, and they have not tried to make that position elected or appointed since. The last thing I will say to the audit provision, all counties are mandated to have an annual audit done by either a certified private accounting firm or the Office of the State Auditor. The Office of the State Auditor also reviews every single audit and certifies that that is done correctly. So we do believe that this bill really hits all the points that are brought up today.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgart, for clarifying those two key points. And Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the retracting of the appointment. My point was retention is the person in that office, and the county can still maintain appointments, but if that person doesn't do the service to the people, then the people would have a recourse at a retention election, normal election time, to remove that person. Right now, there wouldn't be, and I'm all for the counties that don't have a qualified person for these more technical overtime positions to go ahead and do, you know, what is in this bill. However, I wish that we had a way that the people would have a voice in the person that was replacing, not in the fact that they're appointed.
Mr. Hilcart, or Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, I respect your point absolutely. The point, the person who would be picked by the appointment isn't necessarily by the people. It would be by the elected board chosen to represent the best interests of the people. However, I do want to reiterate that stance where even if they didn't like who the board appointed, there is an ability for the people to speak through that 10% petition.
So members or members of the audience, is there anyone else who would like to either testify to the bill or have any questions? No. Okay. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just appreciate the time today and the consideration for House File 655.
Thank you, Representative Rarick. So I renew my motion for House File 655 to be laid over for possible consideration, inclusion in the elections omnibus bill. Thank you. Next up, Chair O'Driscoll.
Nay. We're all watching. No.
Madam Chair, I hear some of the members are already prejudging the bill before we've had a hearing on it. It may well be because of my co-author, I'm not sure.
So, Chair O'Driscoll, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, I ask for House File 729 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2017 Omnibus Elections Bill, should there be one this year.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Chair O'Driscoll, and would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's an honor to be before you here today to talk about House File 729. It is the annual activities of the Secretary of State's office to bring forward an elections bill, and this is what we have before us in 729 this morning. There are a couple of different articles and sections that I'd like to just overview, and we'll also get a chance to hear from Julie Struthers from the Secretary of State's office. The first section deals with the clarification as to when school board members in a special election would be eligible to take office. Again, special elections are different than general elections, where we have a prescribed date on the calendar that that office would expire and the newly elected or reelected incumbent would be sworn in or resworn in for that office. Special elections happen because of the vacating of that office, and so it just provides clarification for us in statute. The second section will deal primarily with the end times that a candidate who is going to be a write-in candidate would have the opportunity to notify the local jurisdiction where that write-in campaign will be taking place, that they want those ballots to be counted as a part of the overall ballot. Currently, state statute doesn't require write-in ballots to be counted as a part of the total unless there's a written request or notification by the candidate or other who would like to have that. Sections 3, 4, and 8 deal with some cross-reference clarifications, and Ms. Struthers will speak further to those when we get further on in our discussion. Sections 5 and 6 allows the Secretary of State's office to hold the canvassing of state-related elections. Currently statute says it has to be held up in the Secretary of State's office, and if many of you joined myself and others to go to the Secretary of State's office yesterday for the open house, it gets crowded very quickly in that small office that he has, and so we are looking to expand that to that meeting needs to be held somewhere in the Capitol complex. I did have a question on the definition of Capitol complex, and I asked if it was a statutory definition, and we do have one in 15B.02, and there's also some parameters that have been defined as far as roads and what the physical structures are. This will allow for if the state office building, which currently houses the Secretary of State's office, is under restoration or is unable to be used that day for or within that time frame for other natural disaster or other public safety issue, that this important work of the people could be done elsewhere on the Capitol complex. And the final two provisions deal with some clarification on those communities that want to move to an even numbered election year where they may have odd number election year or year for their elections. Many communities have chosen to do this to get in sync with other elections to save money and to be more in keeping with when people would wanting to become to the polling place, maybe not thinking about it in an odd numbered year. It provides clarification for that process. And finally, Provision 9 or Section 9 deals with bringing into to account the presidential ballot with the uniform state ballot formatting. And so, Madam Chair, with that, before we take questions, I'd like to offer Ms. Struthers the opportunity to add any clarification to the comments I've made or make a comment from the Secretary's office. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Ms. Struthers, if you would please state your name and your position, who you're representing, and then you can proceed. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Julie Strother with the Office of the Minnesota Secretary of State. I think that that was a better bill overview than I could have given. The bill is designed to be technical in nature, clarifying where there was some ambiguity. The cross-references that needed to be fixed were, you know, when we've repealed state statute and there are lingering cross-references or we've moved a statutory provision and the cross-references simply don't get updated, they're fixes. And the only piece that is really could even be considered policy, and it is the piece allowing our office to meet outside of the Secretary's office. And I will say it's been the practice of the Secretary of State's office for generation to always hold the canvassing board in a public meeting room so it's accessible to the public, and this would just clarify that in statute.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions? No. Seeing none, Chair O'Driscoll?
Ben. Chair, I just ask this to be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2017 Omnibus Elections Bill, should there be one this year.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. So Chair O'Driscoll renews his motion for House File 729 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Elections Omnibus Bill.
Madam Chair, do we ask for public comment?
I know. Oh, thank you, Representative Nelson. Thank you. Appreciate that. Are there any members of the public who would like to weigh in and testify on this bill? Thank you. So once again, I renew the motion. Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion to lay over the bill for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Elections Bill. So next up, we will have Representative Fenton, House File 371. Representative Fenton, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 371 to be for possible inclusion in Omnibus.
Yes. You may proceed.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, I do have an amendment, an author's amendment, to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
Okay.
That would be the amendment A17. 0027.
Would you please explain the amendment?
Yeah, thank you. So, Madam Chair, basically what this is doing is you're going to delete everything after must on page 2, line 4. And right after must, you're going to insert allow. And then on page 2, line 5, you're going to delete everything before the second public. So it should read, the board must allow public testimony from persons residing in the district. And the purpose of this is, as I'll explain the bill, there's a timely manner for this. And the way it was originally written would cost another minimum of 30 days. So we made that technical amendment.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fenton, I guess I'm not sure I would describe this amendment as technical. If I'm reading it right, it gets rid of it. I mean, there is a requirement that public testimony be allowed, but there's no public there would be no public hearing requirement if this amendment were to be adopted. And I know, you know, just a couple days ago, we spent a great deal of time talking about public hearing, you know, the majority was insisting that there be a public hearing in the context of interim ordinances, but here we're actually appointing a person who's an elected position, you know, who represents the people on lot of public policy decisions, and you know, I know there was that reverse referendum requirement on the bill we considered before. I guess I don't know if Representative Fenton wants to comment on that, but to me it doesn't seem like a technical amendment.
Representative Fenton.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm going to ask that Jennifer Wagenius, who's here with and works with our county, answer to this. Thank you.
Ms. Wagenius. Ms. Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The request of the county board to have this as a public input rather than formal public hearing. When we do a public hearing, that adds about a 30-day delay due to the formal publication requirements. And with a public input, we would invite applicants and get public testimony. For Washington County, we do that via digital media, press releases. And then our regular county board meeting is always published as public notice. So there would still be a lot of opportunity for the public to have awareness of the hearing and provide input. But the purpose is, because this is a very short-term appointment, you know, potentially 10 months or less, that adding another 30-day delay to the appointment further extends the gap period.
Representative Freiberg?
I guess I'm just not totally convinced on the, you know, that a 30-day delay is that onerous, you know, in the context of appointing an elected official with policy authority.
Representative Fenton?
Perhaps let me just explain the purpose of this bill to begin with, and maybe it will help.
Sure.
But the reason I'm carrying House File 371 is because this is personal to the constituents in my district who went almost a year without any representation due to the unexpected and unfortunate death of one of our Washington County commissioners. So, and one thing I want to point out with that, so almost a year, a bulk of my constituency and the entire district in which Commissioner Berth served had no representation. And not only that, a lot of people seem to think that a commissioner only, you know, has a vote on the county board, right? But they also work with many other counties, members of other counties outside, to join forces on other boards. So may it be Met Council, may it be mosquito control, therefore also missing out, losing representation in those areas as well. So that's how this bill came about. What the bill does is to allow a temporary appointment until we can hold an election.
Thank you, Representative.
And so in this area, I think time is of the essence. We are not at all taking away the public's right to give their input. We just want to make sure that those without representation have it as soon as possible, and it is only temporary.
Representative Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to just offer some background on this for committee members. I know that Representative Joachim, Representative Nash, Representative Freiberg, and I all have local government experience, and I don't know if you've ever had to appoint someone on your city council because of a vacancy. We've never had a public hearing or been required under statute to have a public hearing in order to make that appointment. We've simply made the notice of vacancy, declaring the vacancy, then asked for interested citizens to come forward, and the board has interviewed those candidates and appointed them. I think what Representative Fenton is doing is actually putting in an additional step than other local governments are needing to do, and that is to make sure that there is an opportunity for public input in an official process. To that end, I guess, that it's not necessarily a requirement. I think it's an accommodation that she's making for people in this particular piece of legislation that we have before us.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Driscoll actually took what I was going to actually ask for clarification on. I thought I remembered that because we did make an appointment. The only question I have, though, is with that, we always gave public notice that we were going to do it, and does this give public notice, or does by deleting that take the notice out? I'm not quite sure. I just wanted a clarification, but you're right. That's why I was going to ask council. I think we did that since city council. So,
Representative Fenton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to also allow Jennifer Wagenius to comment more on this, as it's generally a common practice among my county board.
Yeah, Ms. Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, there would still be public notice. All of our board meetings are noticed to the public through many different avenues, and this would be a board agenda item, so that would clearly be communicated to the public.
Representative Yudakin.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe Council can help us out with, is it in statute requiring a public notice at the city level? And does this just treat it the same? Or I'm having a horrible time trying to remember how we noticed, because it was about 11 years ago. So.
Madam Chair.
Oh. Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Gehring is searching out that answer. I will maybe shed some light on the 1, 2, 3 times I think that I've been involved in that for various different reasons. One is as a result of a death. Two is as a result of somebody being called to active duty in the National Guard, who by statute still gets to keep their position, so it's a temporary appointment. And then third, we had a member who had resigned and moved out of the community, and we needed to make an appointment. In all three cases, we had to declare either a permanent vacancy because of the death of the no longer eligible, and the third would be the temporary vacancy because of the service to our country through being put on active orders through the National Guard. And so what we did is we declared the vacancy, and then the City Council put together a time frame and said, we'll notice it, we'll publish it in our normal places to let people know. Obviously, the media is usually involved in that type of a vacancy, so there is an increased awareness of it. And as a result, people would have to apply by a certain date, and then the council would take the candidates, interview them, and then make a selection at their next or predetermined meeting once they've determined through county, or through, I should say, in this case, city council action as to the process that they were going to do for the time frame on that. And so it might be that at this meeting we're going to declare the vacancy, let people give them 3 weeks to put their names in for consideration. We'll do the interviews the next week, and then by 2 weeks from after that, we'll make the final selection as to who that party would be that the council would look at putting forward and at their appointment on that. I say that and share that because sometimes you'll get into and Representative Nash is a former mayor as well. Will back me on this. I'm 100% sure. Sometimes you need to have, in a small statutory city, a city of the third class, or somebody that has 5 members, a mayor and 4 council members, you need to have sometimes 4 out of 5 people to be able to pass things, to do bond and indebtedness and different kinds of things to move things along. So these are temporary situations. They're unforeseen, and as a result, you need to have that flexibility to be able to take care of the global people's business as well as filling that vacancy. So. Maybe I provided Mr. Gehring enough time to be able to come up with an answer
Thank
on
you.
That.
Chair, just going for the record, I will note that I noticed Representative Nash nodding his head in support of your comment.
I did. Maybe I did.
Mr. Gehring? And if not, we will. Not ready?
Madam Chair, Representative Joachim. So I pulled up the section of statute that governs how city council members' vacancies are filled, and I don't see anything immediately here about notice requirements, but I'm going to keep looking.
Representative Joachim.
That's kind of what I thought, and I kind of got that from Representative Driscoll, that it's best practices and this is how cities do it, but I don't know if we're required to notice it. And this is probably is a hole we have in that statute, too, that we could probably look at. I'm not trying to have your bill fix everything, but I was just trying to remember. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my city council this last year had a vacancy occur, actually in the district that I live in, after the filing for the election. The person announced he wasn't going to run and then actually stepped out in the middle of summer, and they just left the position open, and they decided to fill it at the whoever won the election. They would appoint them after they were certified as the winner, as the they appointed that person as the city council person to fill out that term and then start their term in January. I guess the only concern I have here, again, is the notice part of it. They do have to have public testimony, but I've heard said that the public notices are out there for the agendas and all that. And maybe there is enough notice. It's just a concern that if all counties are doing it the way Washington County is, I'm not sure. And the other thing I've got before I forget, I don't remember if the testifier here identified herself for the tape. I know we mentioned her name, but I don't think she identified herself for the tape at the beginning of her testimony. It's just for technical purposes. But I guess that's the question. The only concern I have here on this is the part about the notice, and it sounds like they're giving notices out, putting agendas out ahead of time. The only concern I would have would be putting notice out for people that might be interested in serving in that capacity for the interim, if they're what time frame they would have that notice, and or if it's somebody's predetermined that we're going to pick Senator or Representative Fenton to fill this spot, and don't give anybody else a chance to apply for it. And that's just an example, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. And
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Nelson. I think, again, I will say that this bill is a work in progress. It was unprecedented. This has not happened before. This is why I'm bringing it up, because such a large constituency or population of my constituency went unrepresented. This is a work in progress. I am absolutely willing to work with people on their concerns. I think we've learned here that possibly, thank you, Representative Feiberg, maybe we need to look at uniformity and look at the cities and how they do things. But I'm willing to work as we move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Sandin.
Madam Chair, just for the record, we are on the A1 amendment, so we don't want to move too far before we get to dealing with that.
Right. Yes, thank you, Representative Fenton. And Representative Nash.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to maybe add some clarity, when we filled the vacancy in Waconia, first we posted it in the newspaper and online, and then we had a posted meeting where the city council got together to actually go through the people who submitted. If you have a quorum of any council, you have to post, so it would be posted. And then when we filled the vacancy officially, it was again at the next available meeting. So from a transparency perspective, again, anytime you have a quorum of the council, as everybody knows, you have to have notice given or at least posted. So I think that the concern that might exist as to whether it is or isn't posted is ruled out by the fact that you've got a quorum present.
Thank you, Representative Nash. And thank you, Representative Nelson. Before we proceed any further, I do want to ensure that we've given Ms. Wagenius an opportunity to state her name and position of who she's representing for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer Wagenius, I'm the Director of Property Records and Taxpayer Services for Washington County. I'm here today on their behalf.
Thank you, Ms. Wagenius, and Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess this might be a question for Mr. Gehring is that this states there has to be, they have to allow public testimony, but does that require a meeting where there'd have to be a quorum? Which would then, a meeting that have to have a quorum would have to have a notice, but if it's not a meeting that has to have a quorum and they have whole public testimony at it, then you wouldn't have to notice it. I guess, is that it? Or am I just being a little looking at this wrong?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, so the usually in statute when we refer to public testimony, that suggests that there's testimony at a meeting that would be open to the public. The public comment would be a type of input where you wouldn't necessarily have a meeting, but you'd have people send email or other sort of like letter comment into a public body. The one thing I pointed out about this language is that it does still require the board to adopt a resolution, enter into its minutes some evidence of the appointment. And so I think the public testimony could come at the time the board is considering that resolution, and then that would comply with the requirements of this section with Representative Fenton's amendment.
Madam Chair.
Chair O'Driscoll.
I honestly have to tell you, when I came out here, I didn't think I was going to be asking this many questions when I wasn't chairing the meeting, but it is something that I have some direct familiarity with. The reason that the statute is pretty vague is it leaves a lot of authority to the local government. Remember, with Representative Fenton's bill right now, counties don't have the ability to do appointments. You have to run through an entire special election, which could delay the voice of the people from a specific district. For many cities, and again, I'm going to have to refer to
to Representatives Freiberg and Joachim how their communities are set up, but many of the cities don't have specific wards and things that are at large, so the people would still have representation on that. In the counties, you have separate districts, and that district would go with a voice unheard. We're actually seeing that right now in the legislature with a vacancy that the Supreme Court had declared during the elections, which will be held in about 8 or 10 days from now. That particular district is going without a voice in the legislature right now as well. I think Representative Fenton is attempting to do is to try to get a voice for those people who have a geographic area that has been defined that no longer would have a voice within the elected body. And to that extent, you know, Representative Nelson, to your point, you could also have a subset of the city council be the people who do the interviewing and make recommendations back to the full body. It's not unheard of for councils to have subsets and working groups and ad hoc groups to work on some of those different kinds of things. This would be a completely unique situation, no question, but it's not unheard of where you'd have members and other technical people who would be a part of subcommittees and different things to work on those.
So members, is there any further discussion on this amendment? No. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 And all those opposed, nay. The motion passes. So Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, explanation, I did state the reason for House File 371 is to give our citizens in my district, certain constituency who have no voice, to allow for them to have representation. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Ms. Wagenius.
Ms. Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As Representative Fenton indicated, we are not seeking any type of change to the requirement for a special election or to the timing of that. Merely the county is seeking an opportunity for Washington County and all counties in the state to fill a short-term vacancy until a special election can be held in order for our community members to be represented. And then also, as Representative Fenton indicated, there are many committee assignments and other county business opportunities that our board members participate in, and having that gap and only four members really caused a burden to be placed upon the remaining members of the board. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Otherwise, no. Representative Fenton removes her motion for House File 371 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
As amended.
As amended. In the, is there, thank you, are there any members of the public who would like to comment or testify to this bill? No. Okay. Thank you. So then Representative Fenton renews her motion for House File 371 as amended to be laid over for inclusion, possible inclusion in the omnibus elections bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and last but not least, Representative Nelson, House File 534.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to move House 534 for possible inclusion.
You may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, if you want to pull out Representative Rarick's maps that he had here earlier. And what this bill does is basically the same thing Representative Rarick's bill, the 655, does, is that it allows the counties throughout the state to be able to do the appointed, and it sets out a procedure for doing that. It sets out, just similar to his bill, sets out a procedure for it to be reversed by the public, and sets out a procedure for the county board to change their mind and go back to elected positions. In 2013, I had a similar bill to this. At that time, it was House File 800. And the bill summary that I still had in my desk from back then, from Deb Dyson from House Research, or analyst from House Research. At that time, if you read now, it says over the years, 44 counties have been authorized. Well, in 2013, it was only 25 counties that have been authorized to do this. They haven't all done it, and it was pointed out Lake County was going to do it, and the referendum was held because of the petition from the members of their county, and then they didn't do it. So in 4 years, we've gone from 25 counties to 44 counties, and when I originally had this bill, the argument was, at what point do we reach the critical mass where we allow all counties to do this and not have this deja vu every year, deja vu all over again, I guess is the term, and have to, you know, have these bills. Because every year we get one or two or three or four. Like I said, since 2013, we've had 19 of them that have passed. And now we're up to 44 counties that are allowed to do this, which is more than half of our counties. So just for simplicity's sake and for expediency, I think we should allow all counties. And that's basically the bill.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Members, any questions? And are there any members of the public who would like to testify to this bill? Would you please state your name for the record and who you represent, and then you may proceed.
I'm Randy Schreifels, the Stearns County Auditor Treasurer, and I'm here representing MACO, that's the Minnesota Association of County Officers. That's made up of auditors, treasurers, finance officers, and recorders. So back a few years ago, there was statewide bills being introduced, and our organization opposed those at that time. And there continued to be separate individual ones coming through, and we were asked by the legislature for MACO and AMC to kind of come to a compromise. And so there was members of MACO and members of AMC that came together and worked out a compromise language, and that's what this bill is that compromise language. So it's something we continue to see. Both organizations agree to this language, so that I guess that's my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public who would like to? Oh, Representative Swizinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to the testifier, just on line 5-6, there's the just got a question. So the resolution must be approved by at least 80% of the members of the county board. Are you guys comfortable with kind of keeping that higher standard as far as approval from a supermajority standpoint?
Yes, we are. That'd be 4/5 of the county board. So yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, Mr. Schreifels, thank you for being here today. Are you an elected auditor treasurer?
I am an elected.
And you said from what county?
From Stearns County.
And might you have indirectly been referenced in a previous testifier as being the only person who, a member who is the only person that has an elected treasurer in their district that would be on the board today?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Very good. Are there any other members of the public that would like to testify to this bill? Please state your name for the record and the entity that you're representing, and then you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Messelt. I currently serve as the administrator of Chisago County and through the County Board of Commissioners work for the 55,000 residents of Chisago County. I am also here representing the Minnesota Association of County Administrators. Most importantly, you'll notice that as a good administrator, I always let the elected official go first, so Randy's done. But he did represent, as the representative is here, Nelson has said too, this has been a long time of work in progress between the elected officials group, AMC, and then the appointed administrators group to try to come up with compromise language that would work for most of the counties that haven't had to come down here annually and to seek special legislation. Representative and Chair O'Driscoll, you mentioned an election coming in 8 days. Actually, I will tell you, it's in 12 days, 8 hours, and 52 minutes. And the reason we know is because we don't have a person sitting in a chair from Chisago County. That is the vagaries of what happens with elections. And, of course, on Valentine's Day, when you think about all those wonderful Valentines, think about us in Chisago County as we're running a special election. Now, what's interesting is you can imagine the ballot in November also had some unique situations because people were voting for an office they knew would not be filled at the time. What was also interesting is we didn't have on that ballot in November who we elected for county coroner, who we elected for county surveyor, county assessor, those positions. Over time, those positions have gone away. If they become increasingly technical, increasingly ministerial in their duties, and they were no longer deemed by this august body to be required to be elected. There are times and situations when those occur. In Chisago County's case, we were down here in 1998 and had to seek special legislation to then change from an elected recorder to an appointed recorder. We are not back here again with specific bills, although we do like what Palm County is doing, our brothers and sisters to the north. But we are in unique situations as well. For example, we recently had our long-term, long-time, very, very successful auditor and treasurer both get reelected. One served, is serving now over 35 years, and one just retired after 40 years of service to the county. We have an appointed treasurer position now, or excuse me, auditor-treasurer position. We combine them temporarily under an appointed because we don't know what the voters will do in 3 years. And so we have a situation where we can get somebody highly technical to come in and assist, but if they don't happen to live in the county or they don't want to run in 3 years, we have no idea what the situation would be like. Hence the desire to have some sort of statewide legislation that would allow county boards to at least consider the possibility of reorganizing as it's appropriate. I want to be very clear, however. Chisago County's current board, my bosses, are not in a position that they will probably change from elected to appointed. But they are in a position to say it would be nice to have that option, to at least have it on the table. And hence our support for the bill, while we are not necessarily in a situation where we take advantage of it. Representative Quam, I think you made a very interesting point earlier, and I was writing it down, about what happens then if we do go appointed and somebody wants to change back. And, of course, the bill in front of you allows for that change to occur. And specific, and also specific to your point, I think it's a very interesting idea about having essentially a ratification of an appointed position. I'm using slightly different terms. Those are interesting questions, and I know that we'd be open to working with the author as we move forward to see if that's a valid point. The way this is written and the work with MACO, I think, brings us to a situation where we do have an opportunity this year to say to counties, at least have the option to consider your structure. There is ample opportunity here for the public to be involved, both in terms of public scrutiny. The county board has to deliberate this in an open public forum. There's a very long process for this to occur. There's also protections for existing office holders. And, of course, there's the position of a possible reverse referendum, which we've seen occur. All of those, I think, give you the opportunity to say the time's right. It's a good time for us to look at a statewide opportunity so that we don't have three, four counties a year come down here and have to seek special legislation. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to the testifier, appreciate it, from Chisago County. Just, you know, kind of earlier in your, when you first started, you kind of made reference to you want to allow the elected official to go first. Yeah. And that's, you know, as deferment, as an appointed employee. And that's sometimes the detractors we have from these bills is by, you know, moving forward with more and more appointed a representation on these boards for, as an administrator or a recorder or an auditor, there is that fear of, you know, allowing deference to an elected official. And, you know, it's that independence that I think sometimes taxpayers are concerned about. I mean, do you feel that that is a potential decent, you know, reason to maintain having elected officials in those positions rather than having appointed because of that potential fear for, you know, making deferment to the elected person after you've been, since you owe them your job?
Mr. Metzl.
Your thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Thies, thank you for the opportunity. I'll use us as an example. We have an outstanding auditor who is now double-duting as auditor-treasurer. Because of the three-year lag, we then had to hire somebody to come in with good technical skills as a treasurer to be our basically a deputy auditor-treasurer, a position we didn't have. The challenge is we don't know what we're going to do in several years down the road. Obviously, I think the deference is to the voters ultimately. So whatever structure you allow us to operate under, the voters have the ultimate say. Right now, the statute would require us to go to the voters and ask them to change it or to come down here and get special bills, which is what happens. Under the proposal of Representative Nelson's authorship, it would allow for that to occur at the board level but then be subject to reverse referendum. My experience has been that a very well-trained, well-experienced elected official in the auditor position has worked very well for Chisago County. There have been times the county board has even said, we like having a check, per se. However, for those few times that that comes up, they also understand that these are, especially recorder and some of the treasurer functions, are very technical positions. And if there was somebody who wasn't experienced and wasn't really well-tuned, there could be conflict between two separate elected offices, which would serve negatively the voters as well as possibly positively the voters. So my deference would be to the elected officials and the voters. If the structure of government that they feel moving forward looks better with a streamlined appointed positions, department heads who are accountable through budgets, through personnel management, that could relate to that accountability. If a county board, however, and the voters feel that they want to have an independent elected official as a checks and balance, that will be the structure they will select. In our case, that is the structure they've selected, and we don't envision that would change.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't directly relevant to the bill we're discussing, but we have this unique opportunity with Mr. Messelt being here and the fact that he raised the issue of the special legislative election that's coming up there. I'm actually getting I've had a bill drafted related to that situation just in the circumstance where a candidate is ruled ineligible by a court to serve. And I'm just wondering, and we've sort of taken it as a granted when we were talking about Representative Fenton's bill previously, that it's a problem, and I would agree with it certainly, that it's a problem when an area is going without representation on an elected body, as is happening right now. I'm just wondering, from the county's perspective, would you like to see that situation changed when a candidate is ruled ineligible? I imagine it's a big expense for a county to have to have a special election under these circumstances, and if you think the system has worked well.
Mr. Messel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Freiberg, I'm reminded of the statement about the never going too spontaneously on issues that, while they're contemporaneous, may not necessarily be well vetted. What I can indicate to you is I think we were probably the first county in the state to be caught with the 2015 change in legislation, where we had this unique 90-day rule. It did cause significant issues for our auditor, and for balloting. It did cause some confusion. And I will share with you that we do feel it will cost Chisago County upwards of $25,000 to run a special election. We did ask the state to pay for it, but, of course, the state said no because it's not a statewide election. Whether the legislature chooses to address that reality of the new legislation or not, we would welcome the opportunity to be part of that conversation, and we would share with you our experience. Other than the financial aspects, though, I couldn't weigh in substantively, perhaps other than my opening remarks, which is we do miss having a representative for the majority of our county to go see, even in this few days. I don't know if that could be adjusted, honestly, but I do know that the structure is a challenge for us.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment to Representative Freiberg's comment, and then just something that maybe Mr. Gearing can get working on a little bit. Do we have any standards, Mr. Gearing, for minimum qualifications for, say, an auditor or a recorder or a sheriff in order to be able to be eligible for candidacy?
Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, so any elected position is subject to the constitutional eligibility requirements, so you need to be eligible to vote in Minnesota, a citizen, of the proper age and that sort of thing. There are some positions that have additional qualifications. I would need to look and see if any of these local positions have those additional kind of professional qualifications. I think that they don't, but I would need to verify that.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair O'Driscoll.
Yeah, my recollection is the same as Mr. Gehring's. The one that I can speak to is that you do need to be post-certified in order to be an eligible candidate for sheriff, and I'm assuming as well to be able to be for county attorney that you have to hold a law license and be in good standing with the Bar Association in order to be eligible. But in the cases of auditors and treasurers and recorders, many of those people have been employees, and then they're kind of, when the elected person has chosen not to run again, they tend to go on the ballot. where I'm going with this is someone like myself who doesn't have a heck of a lot of experience in auditing and accounting could put my name in, and if I'm well-known by the populace, I could be elected, and that would maybe be a disservice to the people in that particular role.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll.
And, Madam Chair, to Representative Freiberg's comments, we worked very closely with the Secretary of State's office to put the 2015 laws in place, and that's from a culmination of the activities that have happened here at the legislature, where we've had candidates that have been announced who, for various reasons, wanted to no longer run, and we didn't have anything in the state on that, and we actually put the net big enough that if a person was disqualified to the courts, that there is the prescribed process in law, and this is literally our first test statewide under the new law.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll, and I see that we have one other testifier.
Thank you.
You would please state your name for the record and the entity that you represent, and then you may proceed.
Members, thanks for having me again. My name is Matt Hilgart. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I just wanted to touch base on really the point that this is all about, which is local control and still guaranteeing public involvement and letting democracy work. The one thing that I want to touch about on this bill that is different from previous year's versions is truly that 10% petition. Prior to I think it was last year's bill, it still would have required a reverse referendum. This bill in front of you today strengthens the public involvement by just saying if 10% of people don't like what's happening and they sign that petition, it reverses the board's decision, just rescinds it flat out. So we think that amendment to the bill is really important and really a good point for this is preserving democracy. Mr. Messel reminded folks that at one time in Minnesota we had over 20 elected offices, anywhere from your county surveyor down to your county coroner. And I don't know about you, but I'm glad that our county coroners are not elected today. I also want to just kind of end by saying that this is enabling legislation. This only allows your elected county commissioners to make that decision. Mr. Messel said that Chisago County, for one, probably wouldn't go to a system of appointed borough officers. What this is doing is just letting your local communities, your locally elected commissioners, make that decision for themselves. And lastly, I also want to thank everyone on this committee for the time today and also for the bipartisan support that we've had traditionally in the House and in this committee. I know I'm looking at some of the members, Representative Nass, Representative Pugh, I think were on this bill in years past. So we very much appreciate your support and look forward to its progress this year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand, because you said 10% it rescinds it, but it's 10% to get on the ballot to then vote to rescind it on 5.26 to 0.34, because it's similar to what was in Representative Rarick's bill. Right? I just want to make sure I'm clear on it.
Madam Chair, Representative Joachim, I believe that is Representative Rarick's bill, which is 10% to get on a petition, or to petition to get on the referendum. But I believe this bill, and Mr. Gehring can confirm this, hopefully, has a, which line is this, sir?
5.31. So
5.11, the petition must be signed.
I'm looking further down on Section B there on 5.26 to 5.34.
Madam Chair, Representative Joachim, the one that I'm looking at is 5.9 to 5.14. The petition must be signed by at least 10% of the registered voters. If the petition meets the requirements of the Secretary of State and any rules adopted to implement that section, if the petition is sufficient, the county board resolution is rescinded.
Okay.
So that's the new section. Which we added from past years, because you are absolutely correct. In past years, it was just a petition to get a reverse referendum. But this is the rescinding.
Joaquin?
Okay, so I was looking at how they revert back to elected offices. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Very good. Is there any other testimony from the public? No. Seeing none, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for a good discussion, and I renew my motion for possible inclusion.
Okay, Representative Nelson renews his motion for House File 534 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Elections Bill.
Members, just a couple of housekeeping details before we adjourn for the week. The page is passing out some updated rules for the committee, and the update that we're looking at is that from an administrative standpoint, the deadline for getting amendments in has become somewhat challenging for us to be able to get things processed, get them in the packets, and get them ready for committee and for people that had a chance to read them. And so what we're going to look at doing is going with a more customary 24-hour filing for amendments, just so that folks have a chance to look at them, ask questions and things prior to coming to committee. So we're going to be adopting those new rules, or I'm going to be implementing those new rules. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question on that. Maybe it's because of the switch over of CAs and Amanda coming back. But are we going to be able to get the notice of the Tuesday morning meetings early enough? Because technically by the rules, the agendas don't have to be posted till 5 o'clock on Friday night. And say an outstate member that is already home by that time and doesn't see it, that really only gives us a two-hour period on Monday morning between 8 and 10 o'clock to get an amendment in. I don't see that happening in this committee, but if somebody wanted to be devious, and maybe I'm being paranoid in this, but maybe if somebody wanted to be devious, they could put controversial bills up Tuesday morning, not post them till 5 o'clock when nobody's here, there's no staff to make amendments and get amendments made or so that we can get them posted. I'm just a little concerned about that. And it would be alleviated by making sure that the agenda gets posted early enough so that that doesn't happen. And I guess, like I said, I don't see that the chair doing that, but I mean, it's a concern I have. And
Representative Nelson, we've been at this for about 30 days, and you and I visit quite a bit, and you've never raised the concern that you haven't seen agendas and things in advance. It is not my intention to do anything like that, and to be as quickly as we get things to let you know and to let your members know and get a post for the public. Should you see that that's an issue, I know you'll raise it to me, and we can work with it from there. I'm just trying to be respectful of processing time and things for staff for some of the same various reasons you talked about. When this committee meets at 10:15, and we have only that short period of time to process paperwork, members should be able to look at those. So if we continue to work together as we've done over the last 30 days for the next 90 days, 120 days, however many days we have left in session, I think we'll get to a successful end together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just hoping for some flexibility on, and like I said, hopefully we're not getting any gotcha bills that throw at us. I mean, and some flexibility there so that if something comes up that we can handle it. Otherwise, you know, I mean, we're cutting off debate and we're cutting off possible discussion here in committee that where we should be doing our work on these bills.
And you and I have worked together for a number of years, and you're not shy and I'm not shy to share things. So, members, with that as well, just to give you kind of a lay of the landscape for next week, we will have committee on Tuesday and Wednesday. We will not have committee on Thursday of next week, so you can plan accordingly on that. And again, Representative Nelson telegraphing what the plan looks like as we know right now. We're just waiting on a few things, see what bill introductions are today for next week and some of the other kinds of things that are coming in. So I thank all of you for your time. And Representative Nelson, you did mention that there was a change in the CAs. Our traditional CA for this committee has been Amanda Tinsley, and Amanda is back after having been out on family medical leave. She and her husband are the proud parents of a brand new daughter. And so if you'll help me welcome Amanda back, we are thrilled to have her back as a part. Members, if there is nothing else before the committee, we are adjourned for the week.